everyone. Welcome to the 90s Court Spookomatorium.
You sound pained.
We're all here together to talk about the spooks.
We are here to talk about the spooks. Before we get started, I just wanted to say that I had this epiphany this week that a lot of the podcasts I listen to, the people listening, like when I'm listening to them, I'm like, oh, these guys, like it feels like they're my friends. And it just dawned on me that perhaps some people think that like they have that feeling about us, that aww, when they listen to this show, they're like, it's my friends, like Andy and Lisa. You're friends with some cool ass people, listeners. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's how I feel about podcasts. If you feel like we are your friends, just by way of listening to this, even if you've never engaged with us, just drop us a line and be like, friends.
Yeah, just say the word friends.
Just say the word friends.
No other context. Yeah, so as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted.
Because of friends. Friendship, Andy.
This is 90s Court. We're here to bring you the spookiest in 90s spooks.
It is spooky.
Oh, and my name's Andy Claude Felter.
I'm Lisa Monahan. You know who we are.
Yeah, you're listening to 90s Court. So for those of you who are not familiar with 90s Court, sorry.
Oh my gosh.
I wanted to do like the most horrible introduction of all time, just like super unenthusiastic about the spooks.
I misread it entirely, and I was just, I totally steamrolled your shit so hard.
No, you're
so
totally
sorry.
Fine. I just wanted to give you shit. So 90s Court, we like to, each week we will bring you two topics from the 90s and pit them against each other in court, usually things that are either very similar or very comparable or we think are like equally popular. It's a good specification to let people know because sometimes people are like, wow, that wasn't a good, these didn't make sense at all. But then it's like 50-50 in the polls like the whole time. You're like, see, we knew.
We knew.
So we take a couple things from the 90s you loved and put them against each other in court, and you can vote on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for who you like best, or you could do all three because, that's how voting should work.
Exactly.
Just have way more power than other people.
I voted three times this election, so why not vote three times for this?
Here's the crazy thing is that's like a bad joke this year, I think.
It's not a good joke. I didn't say it. It's not real.
It didn't happen.
I voted a single time.
So, and then, of course, we like to bring you a couple things near the early part of the episode where we talk about some maybe lesser known things or a little bit smaller or fun things about the 90s that maybe didn't deserve an entire case.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do that. And how about before we get started with today's mm-hmm. show, we give a shout out to our lovely Patreon supporters. By the way, if you would like to join Patreon and support the show, we are at patreon.com/90sCourt. We are giving shout outs today to Vincent. What up, my coffee dude? I'm doing hand motions that you can't see. Those are supposed to be like fist bumps, but you can't see them. Coffee fist bumps. Jacqueline, what's up? Thank you, guys. Michael. Thank you, Clarissa. Thank you. We love you. Thank you. Apton, thank you. We love you.
Every time for Lisa, the Patreon shout-outs just devolves into the Ninja Turtles, we love you, thank you.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, if you're getting a shout-out, that's really all you wanted.
You do. You just want me to do the Raphael, thank you, we love you. If you haven't heard that, it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles coming out of our shells thing I did in one of the past episodes. It's phenomenal. Go back and listen to it because that bit was insane. So... if you guys want to take a moment, if you like the show, tell a friend about us. It means a lot to Andy and I if you would do that, and it might help a friend find a show that they love. It was super fun after we did our Patreon ep this week, which was Fear versus Ghost Adventures, which was awesome. I unleashed a watershed moment where everyone, or at least you and a couple of other people, were like,
the planet found out about Fear and immediately had to watch it.
It was so good. Yeah, all the episodes are on YouTube. I think by way of you guys talking about it on Twitter, we got at least one or two new listens from people. So that helps out too. But the Fear versus Ghost Adventures, guys. Yeah. It was fun. It was fun to do that Patreon episode.
You have to understand, I went to like my first like social event with like multiple humans in like 8 months yesterday, which was super fun. It was outdoors at a campfire and everything, so it was pretty safe and legit. I think I recommended Fear to like three different people last night.
Why not? It started. It was 2000 to 2002.
I was recommending it to one person, and then somebody else came over and was like, "I haven't thought about that show in so long. I love that show." And I'm like, "Let me nerd out with you as long as possible." And then I basically convinced him to watch it again.
Yes, exactly. And again, guys, like, it's just you want nostalgia, we got your nostalgia. Yeah. That was right on the cusp of
it's
like 2000s.
Yeah, it wasn't really a 90s, but that's what our bonus episodes typically are, not 90s related. So
So Lisa, those are Patreon shoutouts.
Yeah, and Lisa, I think you had a special segment you wanted to bring us here for, instead of our normal things this week.
I did. I pinged Andy this week, and I have such a, I have a funny backstory here as well. But real quick, I suggested to Andy that we take things from the 90s and discuss them on this thing. I'm not saying that right, but like we take the things that like we were exposed to either by like movies or cartoons or video games or something that like they were maybe just like a little disturbing and stuck with you for your entire childhood into adulthood. And I went to a drive-in show for a comedian, Nate Bargatze, last night. And it was so funny to me because he, even in his show, it's a tailgating thing. So you drive in, you're tailgating, watching his show. He talked about how his mom in the 90s was like walking or like watching Rescue 911. And he said, I never watched that show. I just happened to be walking through the living room and looked at the TV screen for 3 seconds. And during that 3 seconds, a home intruder tickled the feet of a woman whose feet were hanging outside of her bed. And he was like, and from that moment on, I've been scarred. I cannot sleep with my feet outside of the blankets no matter what. And so it was just super funny to me that like I talked to you about this yesterday. Then I go to this comedian show and he solidifies that this is something that we need to talk about. So and it's funny, wow. But so I don't know. Did you want to go first or do you want me to go?
I mean, here's the thing. I have a lot of like littler things. It sounds like you have some bigger ones, so it's your choice.
I'll tell you what.
You're going first on the court case. So I'll go ahead and go first on this one.
Sure, go for it.
So I have a few. And she kind of said like things that change your life forever. And I'm like, I can't think of like a lot of things that completely changed the way I view things for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. But I do have a lot of things that are memories that are usually, and we talked a lot about this on the episode, of things that we saw even a glimpse of for like he just said, 3 seconds of this one scene and it just ruined it. And it's so many movies that I know for a fact I wasn't watching. I just walked downstairs. It's dark and my brothers are watching this show because one of my brothers is like 5 years older than me or whatever. So like it's not unbelievable that they would be watching some movies that are maybe a little bit more mature than I should be watching. Mm-hmm. So first one I'm going to say is Candyman.
Okay.
Which I saw probably, I don't know how old I would have been, but I just wandered in there and saw a bunch of bees coming out of a guy's mouth and I just literally haunted my dreams for weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Just that's, I don't know why, because I was looking at pictures of Candyman now and I was like, this doesn't look that scary. It's just a dude. But evidently the bees coming out of the mouth thing and the mirror part and saying his name 3 times, all that stuff just spooked the shit out of me. So
just intrusive thought shit. Like it as a result of being exposed to this, now you're like, I don't like candy. I don't like men and I don't like men with bees in their mouths or mirrors.
Mirrors. I think that was the thing that spooked me is like, cause I mean, Bloody Mary is technically the origin story of the say something in the mirror 3 times or whatever. But it was the first experience I had with that. And I'm like, I've never had like, you know, my school people playing games like that or anything. So anyways, I have a lot more to cover. So I'm going to get rolling. I've told this people many times, I might even sit on the show, Ernest Scared Stupid. Yes, it's a comedy. No, I won't watch it again. The troll was the most fucking haunting image ever. Just this massive gross thing. And it turned kids into wooden figurines. Like, and they just, it was terrifying seeing these wooden, like these kids turn into wood. And I was just like, nope. I think somebody even like was like, you should just watch, you at least see the end. That way you see he gets beaten because they put squirt milk all over him. And I was like, no, I'm good. Thanks, though, fam.
I'm good. Yes. Yeah, that troll's not so great. I don't care for his face and his whole aura. He's giving off some bad vibes. Not into it.
I could say the entire movie It, but I'm not going to worry about that. Basically the entire film It, which I saw way too much of that. Blair Witch Project. I think I mentioned this before too, didn't even see the movie, but my brother and his friends were talking about it near me and they were explaining the final scene in the movie and it gave me nightmares.
Oh my gosh.
Literally couldn't sleep that night for no reason. And I was like 14.
Oh my gosh, Andy.
Yeah, it's not great. Not a great thing to admit. And also basically, because I know that I got I don't know what it was that wrecked me with dolls in general, but just the fact that Child's Play existed in general kind of ruined me.
Yes. That one was not so great. Yeah. I don't care for Chucky.
The crazy thing is now, like with dolls, haunted dolls and all that shit, and like ghost shows that'll involve dolls, I'm like, you haven't made things easier for me either. It hasn't gotten better. I'm still terrified of dolls like that.
Yeah. Horror movies love like clowns and dolls and shit. And so that just ruins you forever. It's true.
And last but not least, just have to throw these in here because I always have to talk a little bit about Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes.
Scenes that actually, like the episode wasn't necessarily terrifying, but like it was a concept of something that felt so real. I don't know why, but it just spooked me, was the Tale of the Super Specs, which is an episode where they go to this one like magic shop or something like that, and they get these glasses, and every time they put them on, you see these completely black figures like just standing in the room with them, and they take them off and they're not there. And then they'll put them back on and they'll move. They'll have moved closer or something like that. So I was ruined in the sense that I was just like, is there just people in the room with me, like in another dimension, just watching me all the time?
Absolutely, yes.
Plus the end. Also, this episode ends with the bad guys winning, where they trap the basically characters that you've been following in an alternate dimension and steal their place in the current timeline.
Interesting. And by the way, yes, there are absolutely people in the room with you at all times, whether or not you know it, whether or not you like it. They're there. They're there now. They're like, this episode's going like pretty good so far. They're not malevolent. They're just bored.
I can't hear what the co-host is saying, but whatever Andy's saying sounds good.
This is pretty good. I feel like he's having a good Sunday so far. I feel like things are on the up and up for Andy today.
They're just really supportive and loving.
Yeah, they're not.
They're just
bad.
Out they're there just, cheering for you.
They're quarantining with you. Just deal with it. It's fine.
Oh, now I feel better about quarantine.
See, they're not so bad. Get your super specs. You'll be just fine, baby.
Now, the scariest image.
Okay.
Scariest image, last thing, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Everybody always talks about, and this thing is, I used to would always tell you, the water monster from Dead Man's Float. That's the scariest one. They're like the red, like ragged thing that comes out of the water. Ooh. In that one, it's haunting.
That's Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah, you've certainly seen it.
I think I maybe blocked it. You said this was red. What was it called?
It's colored red, but it's like, it's Dead Man's Float is the name of the episode. And it's just, there's this pool that like something inside of it that's invisible is like killing kids, basically.
Great.
And at the end they throw this like red dye or something like that in the pool. And all of a sudden it appears and it's just the most haunting fucking image. Like this nasty, like zombie skeleton thing. What I was going to say is that is not the scariest image in Are You Afraid of the Dark? The scariest image, in my opinion, is from The Tale of the Ghastly Grinner. Another terrifying clown figure to add to the already huge list in the 90s of haunting images to be afraid of. And the teeth and the look, it's just, if you can see it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
It's the guy in the blue and yellow suit?
I
don't care
smile.
For this guy. Yeah. I don't like his aura
either.
Look
at his teeth. Like, it's just, that is the part that just,
This was pretty gnarly for kids.
That's what I'm saying, dude.
You guys cool?
Are you guys They're good? So cool. Anyways, that's the end of all my things. Sorry, I know that was pretty long, but
no, that was good. No, these are good because it's spooky season, Andy. Let's get our spooks out, right? Okay. My things are a little less severe. My first one has all to do with pooping. Okay.
I'm sorry, can you pooping. Repeat that?
My first thing has everything to do with pooping, okay? Okay. I don't like porta potties, all right? And there are two reasons specific to the 90s that I cannot handle being inside of a porta potty, okay? One, I know I've talked about on the show in the past when we covered Ren and Stimpy in the Royal Canadian Kilted Yaksman episode. There's a scene at some point that is just absolute filler. There's nothing. It's like Ren who's sitting on a potty or in an outhouse pooping, and you hear the plop of him pooping, and then suddenly like a big black spider is just on his back, and he doesn't rattle him or anything, but like it's as if the spider just came out of the porta potty and it's like I'm just hanging out on you now, and
I'm reciprocating
I can't
for your poop.
I can't handle that. I don't like that. I can't handle that. And then to solidify that I absolutely cannot handle porta potties, X-Files, which we haven't talked about on the show before, which we need to. X-Files,
which is wild, huh?
pretty wild. I feel like we're saving up. We're saving up. But X-Files episode called The Host, season 2, episode 2, The Host, aired on September 23rd, 1994 on fucking broadcast television. It's a nightmare. It's an episode about a fucking buttworm monster man that creeps around in the sewage.
No. I need you to repeat that. Did you say a buttworm monster man?
A buttworm monster man. Okay. He's called, I think, I can't remember, Fluke? It's like a
I know what a fluke is, yeah.
Yeah, I did not know what a fluke was, and I learned when I looked it up today and had horrible feelings all over my body. Apparently, he's the product of Chernobyl, and he...
Chernobyl fluke?
Yeah, because he looks like... Did you watch the Chernobyl series on HBO?
I did watch that, yes.
So you remember how their flesh starts doing the flesh thing?
Yes,
I... You do remember that. So this guy has that look to him, and like his mouth is all... Ugh. But so his whole thing is like, the episode has like half-eaten bodies, worms crawling out of people, a guy throwing up a worm. But worst of all, it's like a poop-eating monster that attacks you from the sewers. And like the worst part of this episode for me was when the monster is captured... I know, he's being driven in a U.S. Marshal van. He gets loose, attacks the driver, kills the driver, and then slithers off to a porta potty and then is like sucked into the, like he just goes and hides in the porta potty. So this horrible, disfigured, awful monster butt-eating man is in the porta potty. And ever since then, I'm just like, every time I go in the porta potty, you don't look down anyway. That's like looking at the downed man. You don't look down in the porta potty. But every time every single time I go to the porta potty, I look and I'm just like, is there a butt eating man in my porta potty? Please say no. So
can I share a little bit of porta potty thing?
Of course.
Okay,
please.
So first off, stuff like that just terrified. Like just like even just scientific things, the fact that there's like, you know, like bugs that can like literally like crawl into a man's urethra and like get and like stick in there and shit like that.
Yeah. No.
But I think I have a very different experience because I'm a man of porta potties, which is that I think only once in an emergency was I ever willing to go to the bathroom sitting down in a porta potty, because every other time I'm like, I'll hold it. I can just but then the other thing, the bad side is when you said you don't look into it. Well, I'm peeing, so I gotta look into it. And it is just like, it just looks like diapers covered in just so much poop everywhere.
And like thick blue liquid.
Yeah.
Thick blue liquid. There's so many chemicals to cover up the horrific scene down below. So
and I guess it's
just,
I always assume, like, I think of them as outhouses, which they're not. But like, I think of it being like an outhouse every time, where like there is just a giant crevice like in the ground beneath me or something like that, where there could just be anything living down there just waiting for me to sit down.
Yeah, because he wants to get up your butt and eat it. Yeah, that's just what happened. So X-Files, season 2, episode 2, The Host.
That's where pedophiles
live. It's the worst. That's where pedophiles live. Well, obviously. And then second, well, there are a lot, but like I think the one that I have to absolutely give credit to is Arachnophobia. That movie ruined my fucking life, okay? Arachnophobia destroyed me. I won't go into it too much because that's a whole movie. We can talk about that another time, but like... The scene where all the spiders, all the like 16,000 spiders they have in this film are just like attacking people in the house. And like, I have a lamp that has the little pull string to use because we have a bunch of mid-century shit in our house. Ooh. And in one of the scenes, this woman goes to pull the string down and a spider comes down and bites her hand. And every fucking time I turn that lamp on, I'm just like, I'm going to get bitten. And then there's one that's like, one gets into this old man's slipper. And so every single time I put on slippers, I knock them first to be like, if a spider falls out, he can't bite my toes. And so every time I put, so like when I was talking to you about this idea, it was like, what movie has like scarred you so much that like Nate Bargatze, that comedian I was talking about, does not sleep with his feet out even if he's burning up? He's like, I can't do it because like this thing I saw briefly as a child in the 90s ruined my life. So Arachnophobia
along those lines. Here's because I was thinking of fears that are just like totally irrational and I don't know where they came from. Mm-hmm. It had to have been something cinematically that led me to have this fear, because there's no reason for it. And it's like today, even like it doesn't come up very often, but when it does, it's like I'm like laughing at myself. I'm like, how is this something you think of? Is like I see like maybe like a little like tiny bit of a pipe coming out of the ground or something like that, and mm-hmm. then maybe like several feet away from it, there's another like little pipe or something coming from the ground. There must have been some time in a show where somebody was just like walking or running or something like that, and then just like basically had their ankles chopped off with a razor wire. Because I literally,
oh my gosh,
every time I see that, I like take a high step over the just the space in between them. And I know why that, like I said, this happens maybe like once a year total at best. But like when I'm in that situation, I just have the conscious thought, like, I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. I just, it's like I always step over it. Like there's going to be consequences if I don't.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Andy. See, this is what I'm talking about. This shit just gets in you. You talked about it. I actually wrote that in my notes as a very quick one-off aside. The scene from the original series, obviously the whole movie has ruined my whole life. Yeah.
That's actually what I had in my notes, but I didn't want to go too long on it, so I kept...
It's okay. But the last thing I wanted to share was that the table scene when they're at the Chinese restaurant and they're opening the fortune cookies, and the fortune cookies just begin to explode, and it's just like mayhem. Every time I have Chinese food and they present the fortune cookies, that intrusive thought comes in. I'm just like, oh, it's going to be an eyeball, or oh, it's going to be a dead bird, or like, oh, it's just going to be a big like packet of blood. Every time I'm like, what a delicious meal, here's my fortune, and like every time,
just
so
like I have to hold it out and open it carefully like it's a bomb that might detonate.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's of all the things that could stick with me from it, that's one that like has just latched onto me. But that's our thing. I hope you guys enjoyed hearing our deepest, worst fears.
I was
that
just
are, like,
thinking, like, during this, I was like, I hope you guys like hearing about how broken we are.
Well, but I'm sure they probably have something. Like, if as a listener, if there was like a weird ass thing that you saw, like an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark, a weird cartoon, like there were some weird things on Rugrats and All Real Monsters, like some of that stuff got kind of gnarly. Like if there was something that just stuck out to you and just you're just like, it is just with me, it's an intrusive thought, and it has just like, I don't put my feet out from underneath the sheets anymore because of it, like hit us up with that. I want to hear this stuff because the 90s were a little buck wild. So
I'm probably going to be thinking of this stuff. Like, I'm going to think up more stuff, like, probably during the week. And I'm going to be like, I completely forgot that. Because I'm sure there is so much random stuff that, like, just one singular moment in a TV show or something like that. Or even just life experience. Sometimes you just see something happen and it's like, well, now I'm going to be worried about that forever and for the rest of my life.
Yep. So those are things. And if you think of them throughout the week, Halloween's not till next Monday. Saturday. Wow. Where's my face at? So you guys will hear this. Think of it all week long and just share your scary stories on the Facebook group. Find us at 90s Court, or just search up 90s Court, or just hit Andy up on Twitter. He got time, I guess.
Yeah, I do.
I'm signing you up for time.
No, it's fine. Please. Hit me up on Twitter.
Gotta hear this.
Or whatever.
Or just whatever. But yeah. We're around. So that's our thing for this week. We're going to take a quick break. I think we have a promo this week as well. And check out A Bump from Another Podcast. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be right back with poll results from last week. And then get right into our court cases.
See you soon.
Bye, dudes.
Hello, one and all, to the Insanely Dangerous Retro Pod Show.
Hello, who's this?
Just don't hurt the kids, okay?
It goes bleh.
Who would win in a steel cage match between Andy Crane, Andy Peters versus Neil Buchanan and Tommy Boyd?
Sounds like a scratchy robot chicken.
12-inch BA Baracas dolls that
you do,
didn't really go
like 12-incher.
Here we go.
If it worked how I think it's going to work, it's going to be bang average.
Oh, I'm just over it now.
I am bringing us back to the show. We're back. How was your break, guys?
I hope you guys were all good on your breaks. Because as we all know, Halloween time is just around the corner.
Be good.
And if you weren't good, or if you didn't bring gelatin to the ghosts, the Spider Queen will visit you at night on Halloween Eve and will lay eggs in your mouth.
Perfect. My favorite. I love caviar.
That is...
Spider caviar.
So not what I was talking about. Okay.
It's not. Anyway, that got weird. That got so weird.
It's fine.
So weird. I love it. Andy. Mm-hmm. last week. Do you know, my husband was asking me this week, he's like, what did you guys do again last week? And I tried to tell him, and I could not for the life of me remember what we did last week.
Dude, I think it's because, like, in the meantime, we did an episode Sunday, recorded an episode on Tuesday, and so, yeah. Like, it was, like, I've been thinking about Ghost Adventures in Fear all this week, because that was our bonus episode, so, mm-hmm. Needless to say.
And that ate up all of your week. You were super in the zone with that.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time pounding out that fear, and it was, well worth it. A lot of sitting in the dark.
Oh my.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
So it's my turn to give you the polls, and I am delighted to do so. So if you really do forget what we did last week, it was Scream versus I Know What You Did Last Summer. Which, first off, even if it wasn't bad enough that, like, just one movie was way better than the other, mm-hmm. Also I Know What You Did Last Summer, just the name's just too long. Like, I couldn't fit it on a Twitter poll, so I'm like, you're gonna lose just because you annoy people with having to do an acronym for the first, like, four words of the title of the movie.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
IKWY did last summer.
I know what. What was that band I liked in college? And you will know us by the Trail of the Dead. It's like, okay. That's too long of a name. You're just getting
fancy.
Oh,
that's the name of the song? That's the name of the thing?
And You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead, or Trail of the Dead, or Trail of Dead, but And You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead. That was the name of the band, and every time I said it, and every time I'm saying it now, I feel like I just need to kick myself right in the whole ass, because it was just a stupid band name. My whole ass, so.
Okay. I'm updating real quick, because I know you had some, you gave me the poll results for Instagram, too, so I'm just updating those here, because I totally forgot to do it.
Oh, good.
Okay. So, as you may have anticipated, Scream did pretty well.
Like, a little well.
It's one of those things where it's like, did Scream do well, or did I Know What You Did Last Summer do poorly? Or maybe just a little bit of both. So, Facebook was brutal.
Yeah.
So, Facebook, 80% to 20% Scream. So, you're like, man, like... that's just awful. I can't believe how bad I Know What You Did Last Summer did. Mm-hmm. Instagram, 76% to 24%. Again, pretty similar. You're like, man, like that's like 4-1 votes. I can't believe it. So Twitter. Twitter needed to know, like, to shame even having this episode, as they went 93% to 7%. That is unprecedented for a poll.
Is that worse than Pete and Pete?
Oh, yeah. No, I think Pete and Pete was, like, 18. It wasn't, like, ridiculous. It was just teens. For a while, that was, like, super bad. But, like, now sometimes we get stuff like this where it's, like, 93 to 7, which is unreal.
This is a record breaker, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations, Twitter. You broke the movie.
It's true. It was pretty broken to begin with. It was doo-doo caca pee-pee.
Because I do want to give a quick update, because I'm actually going... I had it listed out on the notes what it was, but I want to give you live updates on the poll that's currently going on Twitter that will be done by the time you listen to this episode. I did do actually a poll. I did it on Facebook and Twitter, but the Facebook one was just my personal account. So Twitter, I will say the comments on Facebook were amazing, and the poll on Twitter is huge. Like, a ton of people were voting on this. Is do you believe in ghosts? That was the only question.
If the answer is not yes, and here's the thing, just haven't met one yet.
Like, people provide these stats of, like, saying like 20% of people believe. I'm like, where do you get your polls from? Because mine is showing, with 75 votes in and quite a bit of time left to go, 66.7% yes, 33.3% no.
Those people, they just don't know how to party, right?
So I appreciate the 2/3 of humans who know truth.
Yes, who have seen it, have experienced it.
I think the thing is that, like, I don't, like, people who don't believe in ghosts necessarily, they're not normally, like, mean about it. They're not like, oh, you're so stupid for believing in ghosts. Usually they're just like, I just don't have any reason to believe. Like, I haven't been given any experience. I think the main reason it makes me sad is that I'm like, I can't talk to you about, like, 50% of what I want to talk about now at any mm-hmm. given time, especially now.
Absolutely. I'm saying, if you don't believe, Unsolved Mysteries has just released some new episodes on Netflix. I believe it's episode 2 where they talk about the ghosts of the aftermath of the tsunami in Japan in 2011.
Oh, wow.
That one's an episode about like the ghosts left over from that. If you don't believe, go watch that episode. You're gonna believe then.
Okay.
You're gonna believe then.
I know this is completely off topic, but since you brought it up, like Unsolved Mysteries, like I was excited. And I was thinking like this should be fun to watch. And then I watched episode one and the whole thing was in French. So I was like, never mind, I'm out. Like I can't do subtitles. It's just not.
So
I'm like, why was that the first episode if other ones were in English? I don't get
Well, just earlier this year, they released like another new season. And that season's not that way. The very first episode of the first ones they released on Netflix earlier this year, that one's amazing. And you should watch that one. Okay. All of it's good. Don't be deterred.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't understand why you would start the show so frustratingly with an episode that is just like, I can't do subtitles, like, because that requires 100% attention from me at all time on the screen. So
it's 2020. No one's got attention for that. So
we're talking about some spooky things this week, particularly some books. Because here's the thing, I kind of wanted to plot twist y'all because, like, there's a certain coupling of shows that you probably, even when you first saw the title, thought that's what we were doing, but we're not. And I love now having this as a tease, because now we got to wait another year before you guys get to hear that pairing.
That's my spooky go. Whoa.
Ba-dum-bum.
You could actually be a serial killer. That was great.
Thank you. That was super loud, too, I'm sure. Really loud. So. So hey everybody, we're covering some books, and I'm gonna let Lisa give a quick warning about these her books beforehand. So we're doing Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark versus Goosebumps books, obviously. So
okay, what's my warning other than I'm spoiling it if you haven't read it yet? Is there another warning I'm supposed to give?
I mean, maybe about like when the books were published and everything.
Right, it's okay. No, I got it. It's part of my notes. I got you, boo.
Okay, cool.
You. So yeah, so we're doing Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark versus Goosebumps, like Andy said. So shall we get started?
Please do, m'lady.
So we are, as Andy said, we are fudging this one a hair, as the book series originally started in 1981, but the final one came out in 1991. And so you know what, guys? We're just going to wing it. We don't fudge it very often. We're not some Keebler elves, but like we're going to fudge it this week because, guys, you were... Is that a good one?
That was so good. Like,
that was good. You're welcome. Plague Ground from the Patreon episode is still my favorite pun of all times. Plague Ground. It's good. Okay, sorry. We're fudging it. Okay? Because if you were born in 85, 89, you still, even if you were born in 2005, you've probably seen these books and you're still going
to
read them. Okay?
If you went to any Scholastic book fair ever in your life.
Yes, or ever had to go to the library and been like, what the fuck are we supposed to do in the library? It's during school hours. You find the Scary Stories book, you read them, that's what you do. So we are fudging it. Okay? These series of books were written by Alvin Schwartz and illustrated by Stephen Gamble, okay? And hats off to Gamble for making some of the gnarliest images that have legit haunted my childhood into adulthood. Because, like, going back and doing research for this, I was like, I don't like this. I don't like that. It's just talking about, like, the stuff from earlier, like our things earlier in the show. This is the same thing. It gets in your brain, and it's an intrusive thought, and it's there forever. So cannot think of a single kid from the 90s that didn't either have these books or know about them or heard about them or like totally feared them as a result, okay? And the books feature a lot of short horror stories that are appropriate-ish for like middle school. But of course, it was the 90s, and so everyone got a hold of them way earlier than that. And I believe they were even available in elementary school libraries from what I could see. Excuse me. So the stories in each book were heavily influenced by folklore and urban legends and stuff like that, including influences from Shakespeare, T.S. Eliot, Mark Twain, etc. So the three books in the series, and boy, I mean, you talk about hitting hard, right? Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, 1981. More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, 1984. And then finally, in my opinion, the best one, Scary Stories 3, More Tales to Chill Your Bones, 1991. And so the third one definitely was like spooked me the hardest, spooked my guts completely out of my body, and because it had stories in there like Harold, the Red Spot, Is Something Wrong, stuff like that. We'll go into
Harold is the scarecrow, correct?
It is the Scarecrow one. Okay. Yeah, and so we'll go into those a little bit more in just a little bit. But those Aforementioned stories, I just said, they had some of the most terrifying artwork to accompany them that, like, it just stuck in my mind forever. That picture of Harold, the Scarecrow, kind of, like, lolly, his legs splayed out and head kind of to the side and hanging off this post. It's not that, it's not so great.
And you
want to
know
like
what?
That.
Just as a quick side note, I'm sorry to give spoilers because if you're talking about this later, but in the movies, like the movie that came out in, like, 2019.
Mm-hmm. I did not talk about this. Yeah.
Crushed, like, the Harold image and the Harold that they did. Everything they did in that movie was so true to form for the books, and I love that. And mm-hmm. that image of Harold was so spot on with the image from the book too. So
I did not watch that movie for this. I did watch a documentary about this movie series though, which was interesting-ish. I'll talk about that in a second, but I'm glad to hear that because I wanted to watch that, but I was like, I don't have time. Sorry, but I knew you would watch it, so I knew you could chime in. So the good to know. So the thing about these books was that they weren't just scary. They were actually pretty dark in terms of the content. And so as a result, the book series was the single most challenged book series in the 90s, the seventh most challenged in the 2000s. And again, it hit the list in 2012. People often cite concerns with violence. There's cannibalism, disfigurement.
People are still trying to kill this book in 2020. They're like, gotta get rid of it.
Probably not anymore.
It's been almost 40 years.
It's been a long ass time. But people, I mean, because it's still floating around, but I don't think it matters so much anymore because like 4 minutes on TikTok will show you some of the most like depraved images in humankind. And you'd be like, that's scary stories to tell in dark. I'm going to read to my like 2-year-old daughter. Yeah. If they put
Log
it in
into your mom's Netflix account and destroy yourself, basically.
Just
like,
do it. Just do it. Yeah. Or just open your eyes in 2020. Real life is much more terrifying than whatever these books have to offer. So, the documentary I watched was almost primarily about the controversy and people trying to get the book removed repeatedly and the fact that there was so much uproar. But then there was also coupled with the fact that people were like, hey, at least kids are fucking reading, okay? Like, mm-hmm. like if this is what is getting them to read and enjoy a book and build their imagination, that's fine. They're not going to go out and eat someone because of this book. They will because of TikTok, but not because of this. So let's talk shop on some of the stories that were fucking rough, yes. okay? Scary Stories 1, the very first one, 81, High Beams. So this is a story that's actually pretty unsettling as a female because it's just like, it's about a girl who's driving and the person behind her keeps throwing on their high beams and leaving them on for a while. And then he just kept doing it and following her until she's all the way home. And then I'm summarizing all this. Sure. When she gets home, she runs in the house and says, call the cops. And the cops come and talk to the driver. And he was just like, you don't want to talk to me. You want to talk to the guy in the car. It's like, I had my high beams on because every time I saw a guy enter her car before she got into the car. And every time he went up to try to overpower her, I threw my high beams on to distract him. And that's the story. So like that kind of puts in your head the constant fear as a female to be like, is someone in the back seat?
That yes. is like, and here's the crazy thing. I've read these books. I forgot about that one because mm-hmm. that, like, there was a time at least when, like, I had a pretty big car, like the back seat and everything like that, mm-hmm. where, like, during spooky season or after seeing a spooky movie or something like that, yeah, like, the thought of something being in your back seat is a pretty terrifying thing. But
it's super terrifying. So that way, and like a lot of these stories aren't just to be scary. Some of them are a little humorous. Some of them are cautionary tales. This one's
the Viper.
Yeah, so, The Viper, exactly. I didn't remember the Viper from my childhood, but in the documentary they talked about it, and I was like, oh, that's just kind of cute. The Viper is just a window wiper. So Room for One More from the first series as well. It's a guy traveling on business and couldn't sleep, and then one night he's at his friend's house staying there. He heard a car turn into the driveway. It was a hearse, and it was filled with people, and the driver looked up at him in the window and said, there is room for one more. And then he waited a few minutes and then drove away. And he was like, that didn't just happen. And then all of his friends were like, it was just a nightmare. You're cool. So the next day at work, he's waiting for an elevator to take him down. And one arrived and it was fully crowded. He opened it up and someone in the inside said, there's room for one more. And it was the driver from the hearse. And he said, no thanks. And the elevator shut. And then everyone began to scream as the elevator like lost control and slammed into the ground. And it was just like, middle school, that's maybe middle school to read that shit. Maybe not second grade, third grade.
Is it kind of like, is the inference it was kind of like premonition or something like that of that event? That's, like those. I just think like those are just interesting. I like those kind of stories.
Yeah, that's a good one. From moving on to more scary stories, the second one, 84, Wonderful Sausage. So that's a title that someone chose for a story, but it's about a butcher who got in a fight. Like right off the bat, they're like, there was a butcher. He got in a fight with his wife. He killed her. I was like, whoa, that escalated very quickly. And then he takes his wife, grinds her up and uses her and sausage and sells it. And then it becomes so popular that he just keeps killing people in town and animals and stuff like that until one day he can't catch this one boy that enters the shop. And so he ends up chasing him with a butcher knife. And then everyone realizes what's been going on, why all these people have been going missing. And then, so that's a weird one. Wonderful Sausage. Yeah,
just like a bad version. I mean, also, it's just basically a bad version of Sweeney Todd.
Yes, exactly. Real quick one, Sunday Morning. This one wasn't so great, but it was pretty good. It's about a woman who accidentally woke up in the middle of the night and thought she was late to church and went to church, and it was just a service for the dead. And so the imagery there was pretty spooky dooky. Man in the Middle. So this is the one I think that people probably, aside from Wonderful Sausage, where you ground up a wife that you fought and then killed her. Man in the Middle, this one's short but dark. It's got three men who enter a subway car that had just a girl on it. She's riding alone on this train. Two of the men were holding up a guy in the middle who seemed to be limp, maybe sick, maybe drunk, something like that. So the other two are just sitting with him on the subway car. He's just kind of lolling about. And then one of them gets off at one stop and is like, bye, guys. And then another one gets off and he's like, well, see you later, pal. And then the train takes a turn and the guy slams into the floor. The guy that was in the middle slams to the floor.
Uh-huh.
And the woman sees that he has a bullet hole in his head.
Freaking knew it. Like, I...
Yeah.
I think I must have looked at a lot more pictures in this book than reading them, because I do not remember some of these stories.
I don't remember some of these stories either. The pictures, absolutely. The Red Boil. Shit, I didn't write this one down for some reason.
Oh, I know. Is it the one? Yeah, the thing where the thing appears on her neck.
It's like a cheek. It's just a girl that gets a spider bite or like a spider lays eggs in her cheek. I don't, for some reason, did not write the information down on that one. But
that one is just it's just such a terrifying thought. Like, I can't, it's not supernatural or anything like that. It's just this could literally happen to you and it's just awful.
It's just the worst. It's just the absolute fucking worst. And I don't know. They talked about that one in the documentary, to talk about fear of reproduction or something, not knowing how babies are born. It's just or it could just be about spiders being born into your cheek. No big deal. The last one I'm going to talk about is from Scary Stories 3, Harold. Okay, yep. Harold. This is probably heralded. Get it? Heralded as the scariest of the stories, at least in my opinion. This is about two men who make a scarecrow to keep birds out of their pasture. They have a farm and everything like this. And they end up making fun of it, smearing food on the face of the scarecrow. And they call him Harold, named after a farmer that they don't like. And they give him, he has little pointy eyes and a sharp nose. And they would punch it and make fun of it. And then one day they were punching it and it grunted. And they were like, oh, that's not cool. And then later on it grunted again. They're like, well, there's probably just the mouse inside of it. No big deal. Who doesn't have a mouse inside of them?
Sure.
And so they got wigged out, but they moved on with their lives. So one day during dinner inside the farm, Harold stood up and walked out of the house. And this is where things got really awful. Cause then they say he started, and this is in quotes, trotting back and forth like a horse on its hind legs. And that's a terrifying image to think of. That one has stuck with me through my childhood, that thought of the scarecrow running like a horse on its back legs. It's just odd enough to be my butt tingles. I don't like it. And so they had to leave, but forgot a milking stool back at the farm. So they drew straws and one of them had to go back. And when the man who didn't go back looked back for his friend, he saw Harold back on the roof, stretching out a bloody skin to dry in the sun.
I just listened, because like I said, there's a Rick, a friend of ours, who did a Toys Were Us podcast, and I think now he's on Legends and Libations. One of the episodes was literally him with great sound effects and background music and everything doing readings of this. I listened to the one of Harold, and I was thinking, I was like, was the milk stool worth it? Did
no.
you Did you think it was important enough to go back?
I think it was something like it was necessary and expensive in the, you know,
you
in the context of the story, but like
you saw
you could
that
just sit
thing.
On the ground, loser.
You saw that thing get up and like start chasing and running around and stuff like that. I'm like, no, I'm done.
I'm not going back. We're never going back. Nothing there is worth it. The scarecrow is now the heir of the farmhouse.
It's
so
like, man, I can't believe I inherited such a great amount of property.
Exactly. So listen, that's scary stories. I know that this is iconic to any child from the 90s. Do you have any extra thoughts you want to add on to because I know you love this book series too.
I mean, it's yeah, like I absolutely loved it. And like I said, seeing the movie, like the way, because it's so, I will say this, I don't mean to give spoilers because it's a fairly new movie, but basically like just the general summary is there's an actual story that's going on with like real kids and the current and everything like that. And it's just throughout the story, like of the stuff they're going through, just different stories from the books, like start happening, like just naturally, and it's very natural how they incorporate all these different books into the storyline and everything like that very rad manner. But main thing I want to say is the head popping out of the ground with a red nose and a little bit of blue, and like a cracked fissure in his skull, and the little stovepipe that is the image that has, I mean, I've just seen it so many times, and it's like when you say scary stories to tell dark, I see that image in my head immediately.
And the one I see is the is Something Wrong, which is the giant floating skull with like bulging teeth and huge eyes, and he's tapping someone on the shoulder that's just walking. That one stuck with me. I don't like that one. Yeah.
Anyways, no, I love these books, and I really, and so, like I said, I was glad to hear some stories that I didn't recall or wasn't as familiar with, but
there it is.
Awesome. So, I'm here to talk to you about some books that were from the 90s.
Show off.
Like, and that's the thing. I'm doing this, like, you have to understand everybody out there, and this is going to be hurt for people who are Goosebumps fan to hear us, but Lisa and I were not big Goosebumps fans. I just didn't read them. Like, I just didn't read the books, so it was kind of like drawing straws on who got to do Goosebumps.
I read a few of them. I cannot for the life of me remember which ones they were, but they, I mean, like,
they
were good enough.
They weren't nearly as haunting and scary as
no.
Scary Stories was, but...
Right.
So let me talk to you about a little bit, because we are just focusing on the books. I'm not going to be talking about the TV show. Sorry, everybody. That will be for the future. And that's part of the episode that I thought everybody was going to be sad that we didn't do this year. So,
take that.
Suck it, fans. R.L. Stine. Think about a name that, like, just brings, like, a name that so just seamlessly brings haunted images and everything like that, and just like feelings of Halloween to your brain, like faster than R.L. Stine, which I thought, I was like, well, but the name kind of lends itself to that. And then I thought about it, and I'm like, it's not a particularly scary name. It's just been ground into me so long from Goosebumps that it is a spooky name because of that, kind of like Stephen King, you know?
Yeah.
So
true.
The artist,
but yeah, so, yeah. But anything with punk, J.K. Rowling, yeah, anything with like, where you just got the first name abbreviation, that's what I'm thinking of, that automatically puts you into a different category. It's like,
sure.
M. Night Shyamalan. Shyamalama Ding Dong.
Shyamalama Ding Dong.
Proceed.
The artist formerly known as Jovial Bob Stine, that's right, has been
writing... Jovial?
Hold on, you'll find out why. Has been writing since the 1970s. He started out, he would write he wrote several humor books for kids, and started a humor magazine called Bananas, published by Scholastic Press from 1975 to 1984. Stine had a lot of works in the middle of that, and I think it was because when he was writing all of these comedy books, his like pen name and everything was Jovial Bob Stine, like because he's writing these funny, cute stories and everything like that, which is funny in retrospect, now thinking about the fact that he's like, I write scary books. Another thing that I found that was great on R.L. Stine, he did several other works in the upcoming years between 84 and 92 when he'd first write Goosebumps, including Eureka's Castle. That's right.
No
Eureka's
way.
Castle. Don't even get me started how much that show was everything in the early 90s for me as a kid.
It was really
so
good.
89, Stein began writing the Fear Street books. I've heard of those. I never read any. For finally, in 1992, Stein and Parachute Press, a company that was co-founded by his wife, Jane Waldhorn, went on to launch Goosebumps. So the stories typically will follow child characters who obviously find themselves in scary situations, usually involving monsters and other supernatural elements. From 1992 to 1997, 62 books were published under the Goosebumps umbrella title.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah, and I mentioned that because he actually had like seven different series of books, and I have those later that I'll be mentioning what they are. Okay. So the original one, like these are considered the quote-unquote original Goosebumps. Just that's what they were called. Other ones would be Goosebumps something for the names, but these were the OGs. And I read something that I thought was interesting was that they always started, the books would always start or be centered around some place that's super mundane, like a kitchen or like an office or like, you know, a front yard or something, like just places mm-hmm. that are not unusual, so that the kids immediately will identify with that and associate it as like, oh, this could be happening to me. So he did that very intentionally to bring the kids into having it not be like, oh, they're in Antarctica. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me.
Yes, that was part of the documentary. R.L. Stein was on the documentary and was interviewed for it. And he talked about just that, to be like, it doesn't have to just be like a setting in a cemetery or something like that's like scary stuff can happen anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this.
So the first book in the series was Welcome to Dead House, which I will tell you, and I'll mention later on, I did listen to a book on tape of that. I will say I'm not very good at listening to book on tapes, so you're not going to get a lot out of me on that one. Okay. It was published in July of 1992, and since that book, the series has sold over 400 million books worldwide in 32 languages, and it is, I've seen multiple, just depending on the site, the second best-selling book series in history, just behind Harry Potter. I saw another thing that said it was the best-selling book, even better than Harry Potter. So I don't know which is accurate or if that changed at some point. But obviously, he is still writing books today. So it's crazy. I just think of R.L. Stein as being so old, but I'm just like, I guess it was just, he pretty much just started his book, his Goosebumps stuff, like when we were seven. So, I mean, he hasn't been doing it for an obscene amount of time, but it is super long. So the Goosebumps series falls under the categories of children's fiction, horror, and thriller genre, though Stein considers them scary books that are also very funny. The ones I read, I was like, not particularly, but I get it. Usually a book involves a child protagonist, male or female, almost always middle class, which is so, like, they said always middle class. I'm like, why are you mentioning that they're always middle class? That's such a weird, I guess they're figuring like, that's probably the people who'd be reading these books, which is super, I mean, it was 1992,
That's just a weird thing to say.
It's a weird stereotypical thing to add in, but yeah.
Yeah.
Many different settings and many books involving the children moving to a new area or going to stay with relatives. Those were like, basically, I guess it makes sense because if they're just at the home they've always been at and nothing has happened, like, it'd be weird for all of a sudden something to start happening. So usually it'd be like they'd be moving somewhere or visiting somewhere or, you know, somebody moved to the neighborhood or something like that. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
First books are written in first-person narrative, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go too far in the paint on this, but basically he made sure that intentionally that no one dies in his books. Like, there might be people that have died beforehand, but nobody actually dies in any of his books.
That's a nice thing to do.
Stein says the success of his books can be attributed to their absence of drugs, depravity, and violence.
I guess.
Why? Like, why did you feel like that is the key to your success?
Like, don't do drugs. I mean, spooky shit happens regardless.
Like, the fact that you had to even mention that, like, in a children's book series.
Yeah.
Just have, like, tons of heroin. Okay, so the crazy thing about these book series is how often they came out. Largely a new book every month, occasionally 2 months. But basically, Stein was just pumping them out one after another.
Yeah.
Stein,
which means they're very high quality.
Yeah. Stein would finish books, some of the books, in as little as 6 days.
What?
Like, unbelievable. Like, he said, normally on average, it'd be like 3 weeks or something like that, but 6 days. Can you imagine writing a book in 6 days, having it like taken to the publisher, edited and all that stuff, and just out for delivery the next month?
Nope. No, I could not. Thank you.
Anyways, so the book that I did listen to the entire book on tape and was able to pay attention was called The Ghost Next Door, which I read a little synopsis of it beforehand, and I was like, this one doesn't sound particularly scary, but it is just a nice story in general. So this was released in July of 1993.
Okay.
Let's see. So here's the crazy thing. So you would think that the book title would be a huge giveaway. Like, The Ghost Next Door. They're like, well, I guess I know where this one's going. Weirdly, in a weird way, it was not. It was actually pretty good. So, and I'll read this kind of summary of the story and everything like that. And I want you to be thinking, like, do you think anything might have stolen this idea in the future?
Okay.
So, two main characters are Hannah Fairchild, it is told through her first person, and Danny Anderson, who lives across the street from Hannah. So basically, the entire book is these weird situations arriving for Hannah, where she would start to think that Danny was a ghost. He would just, like, all of a sudden, she'd just be, like, looking down, and then she'd look up, and he'd just be there, and they would, you know, but they got along super well, but he said he lived in this house across the street, and she's like, I don't remember anybody living there, and, like, I definitely didn't see you move in recently, and he didn't know who any of her friends were at school and everything like that, and so she just had suspicions over and over again that Danny might be a ghost, which is, frankly, a weird first thought to have, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
She thought that pretty soon. So throughout the story, we do hear this deep voice speaking to Hannah, like, out of nowhere, like, she kind of, like, everything goes dark, and then there'd be the shadow up in front of her, just, like, saying, Hannah.
Ooh.
Hannah. And that's exactly
like that.
The voice from the narrator. When suddenly she'd come back to be reality, it would be gone. And oftentimes after that, Danny would show up, like, immediately afterwards and be like, are you okay? Meanwhile, Danny has some really shitty friends who are asshats and wanted to do super illegal stuff to the point of ridiculousness. Hannah is hiding. So any of these scenes where it's with the other people, Hannah is hiding and telling us what she sees from, like, the bushes, including going to steal a fancy mailbox from this man who used to be the postmaster. They got caught the first time, and the guy said, if you come back, I will have a shotgun next time.
Very fun. Cool guy.
So Danny, rightfully, who didn't want to be doing any of this, he's like, fuck this, I don't want to do it. But they're, like, basically peer pressuring him so hard and calling him a pussy, basically, if he doesn't do it. And Hannah starts getting, like, super, super bad vibes. Like, she is like, something bad is going to happen to Danny, and she just knew it. Because I think at some point she stopped thinking he was a ghost, or at least, like, for a little bit. But she knew something bad was going to happen to Danny, and she thought it had something to do with that house. So the next day, out of the blue, I guess something else made her think he was a ghost again, and she confronts Danny and said, bro, you're a ghost.
Bro ghost.
And Danny's
Broast.
Like,
Broast.
Danny's like, what? So she even, and then she tries to touch him, and her hand passes straight through him. And so then Danny, who's very scared and confused, is like, I'm not a ghost. And then he pushes his hand back towards Hannah, and his hand goes straight through her body. And then Hannah finally realizes that she is the one who's been dead this whole time. Whoops.
What?
Yeah. So it's the ghost next door, but plot twist, it's a different ghost. Like, you didn't know that the character you've been seeing things through this whole time has been dead the whole time.
That's a great one. Sixth Sense.
Yep. Thank you. I'm glad you remembered to be thinking about it.
Yeah, I was this whole time. I was like, where's this going? No, it's immediately. It's like, oh, yeah, Sixth Sense.
Yeah. So
wow.
Danny seems to be freaked out and takes. That's funny. That's not even the end of it. So then basically he freaks out and runs away. And the shitty friends again are like, we're going back to that house for that guy who's threatened to kill us with a shotgun if we go there. And the place that Hannah
hanging out with him, he sounds fun.
Yeah, and the bad vibes place where Hannah didn't want him to go. So she's out in the bushes watching, and she suddenly doesn't see them, and they go inside the guy's house. I don't know why. And during this time, suddenly, like, the house, you start seeing a light coming from inside the house, and she realizes that somehow they've lit a fire in this guy's house.
Oops.
Which is weird. And I think at that moment, whenever she saw the fire, she suddenly had a flashback and remembered, wait for it, that she was responsible for burning down the house and killing her entire family. Not on purpose, but she did. And I'm just like, that's a pretty cool memory to come to right now while this house is on fire.
Wow.
Yeah, so basically the fire's lit and the other two get out, but they're like, oh my God, Danny's still in there. And so Hannah, like, again, knowing that something was wrong, runs in there to get him because she knows this guy's going to die. And she ends up saving him and getting him out of the house. And afterwards, like, a couple adults come up to Danny and they're like, what happened to you? And they said, Hannah saved me. And they're like, what Hannah? And he said her full name. And they're like, Hannah died 5 years ago. Her house burnt down and the whole family was killed. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, suddenly Hannah starts fading away and hears the voice of her parents calling for her to come home as she says goodbye to Danny for the last time and fades away.
Whoa.
So it's kind of a sweet emotional thing at the end, which was nice. But yeah, it got pretty heavy all of a sudden at the end. That was a pretty good story. I liked that one.
That is good.
I did also listen to The Dead House, like I said, and I feel like I didn't pay attention well enough. But all I kept hearing about was just apparently, like, this house just, like, throughout the decades, just so many dead kids. Like, just
nonstop.
Like, this
just,
is the great thing is he gets
up
around not killing kids in his books by being like, they didn't die in the book. They died several years ago, so it's fine.
Violent, horrible, violent deaths, yeah. But, like, didn't happen on my watch.
Yes.
LOL.
Evidently, the house was just like, we need more dead kids. Like, that was, like, the main thing is that they're like, we have to get more dead kids. We need blood.
Some houses just that's a weird thing to list on Zillow. Like,
need.
This house doesn't run on electricity.
It runs
on the blood
on
of children's
blood.
Don't worry about it, fam. You live near an elementary school. You're good.
Yeah. So okay, let me see. So the original series, so there's seven different, like I said, seven different series basically in the Goosebumps universe. So there's Goosebumps, the original one, Tales to Give You Goosebumps, Give Yourself Goosebumps, Goosebumps Presents, Goosebumps Series 2000, Goosebumps Horrorland, and Goosebumps Most Wanted.
What about Tickle Me Goosebumps?
Tickle Me Goosebumps.
What about
Swan Lumps?
Oh my.
I'll mention
Swan
that.
Swan Lumps.
If anyone here has ever listened to Hey Riddle Riddle, they do this thing called Swan Lumps in the show, and it is, like, my favorite part of the entire show, to be quite frankly, quite frank about it. It is terrific. So,
Swan Lumps. That's
Swan
good.
Lumps. So
that's good.
R.L. Stine would write here's a fun fact. So R.L. Stine, when writing his books, would write the title of the book first and then do the plot.
That seems like how I would do shit because I'm, like, a bad writer.
He just comes up with a title and is like, how am I going to make this a book? And I just love that as being the way of doing it. So, and I did list similar. You called it. You knew the Sixth Sense thing. So Dream Girl from Are You Afraid of the Dark is the one I always think of. And it is the one that M. Night Shyamalan admitted stealing the idea from for the Sixth Sense. He literally stole it from the Are You Afraid of the Dark episode called Dream Girl. However, The Ghost Next Door came out in August 1993. Dream Girl came out in March 1994. And, of course, The Sixth Sense came out in 1999. So, technically, Goosebumps was the first to do it. It wasn't exactly the same as, like, The Sixth Sense thing where it's, you know, but it was very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, lastly, evidently there are rare Goosebumps books. There's four of them.
Rare books.
Yeah.
Okay.
Legend of the Lost Legend, which is a great name for a book.
That's not so great.
Werewolf Skin. I Live in Your Basement! ! And Monster Blood 4. These books only exist in as first editions and are known to Goosebumps fans as the unreprinted. So, anyways, again, like I said, didn't really read these. There was just so many, but I know, like, for people who did read them, they read the shit out of these. There's just so many, and it was just, you know, getting books that rapidly, so fast for so long, had to be amazing. So anyways,
I think what I love the most about Goosebumps books was that, if I'm remembering correctly, unless I'm totally misremembering it, is that the cover had bumps on it, right? They kind of raised texture. Am I misremembering that?
I'm going to feel bad telling you that I just did a case on it and I don't know.
It's okay. I totally missed the whole thing, like all this super cool shit from I Know What You Did Last Summer last week, because I was like, man, this movie sucks. But
yeah, but it's okay.
I feel like that, maybe that's a missed memory, but I don't know. Yeah. I could be wrong.
So, but yeah, anyways, that's Goosebumps. So anyways, a couple books. It was nice to get some books in here again, because we did I Spy versus Where's Waldo, which is about basically a game more than a book.
Yeah.
Basically a game. So it was nice to do some actual books and cover something a little bit different. And usually after doing horror movies, we like to do something a little bit more lighthearted afterwards. So anyways, Lisa, you want to take us out with the Where to Find Us?
I will. Guys, you know that we are on Facebook and Twitter at 90s.court. We are on Instagram at 90s.court. All three places we put the polls up, so you can Instagram is on Instagram stories, so feel free to jump on any one of those or all three of them if you're feeling nasty and vote for all of the whichever one you like better, Goosebumps or Scary Stories. I had to think of whatever I covered this week. If you want to support the show, it's been a long weekend. My brother. Okay. That's if you good. Want to support the show and get some bonus content and shout outs, hop on patreon.com/Patreon. Is it? Yeah. Patreon.com/90sCourt. And as always, hop on iTunes or Apple Podcasts and leave us a nice 5-star rating or review. We would love that. It makes us so happy. We love
so
hearing
happy.
From you guys. It makes us so happy. It would be a nice little Halloween special treat. I'm going to have Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and read reviews. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
On Halloween. So.
And tell us how you feel about ghosts.
Yeah, don't be afraid. And also tell us what spooked your guts right out of your whole body in the 90s.
I'm going to be honest. Every time you say spooked your guts, I get so grossed out. I don't know why.
Well, that's the intent.
That's my problem.
I'm glad that I'm achieving my goals
in
life.
So, anyways, Lisa, any parting remarks before we depart?
I'm not going to steal your stay rad. I've got nothing. Just have a happy Halloween.
You
have a safe, socially distanced Halloween.
Stay radical is for everyone.
Stay radical. It is. But have a safe Halloween. Be good. Don't go necking with strangers.
Well, do that.
It's not the year. It's not the year for necking with strangers.
Yeah, don't eat razor blades.
Don't eat razor blades.
That's my main advice.
You can't tell me what to do, Dad.
Right.
I'll do what I want. Thank you. So you guys have fun. We'll see you next week with another episode of 90s Court. You guys take care. Have a good one. Happy
Halloween.
All right,
stay rad.